Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to State of the Empire, Consequence of Sound Star Wars Speculation Podcast, where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
And this episode, we're going to be talking an awful lot about Solo. But hey, never fear. The movie that comes out May 25th, we ain't going to spoil it for you unless you want it to be spoiled for you. That's why we lock all of our spoilers safely behind the blast doors. Up till then, we'll be talking about all kinds of fun stuff that is not particularly spoilery, but is full of insights. And that will pertain indeed to some Solo stuff. Also some comic book news, some surprisingly things about episode 9. Oh, yeah, and even a little matter of the new cartoon show we've been talking about being on the horizon for a while now. We know some things about that, finally. But really, you could say we've known some things about that for a while now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, long story short, if you're worried about spoilers, don't worry about spoilers. We got that taken care of. You'll know when it happens, and let's dive in to talking about Solo. Our last episode was an archival interview episode where we played some old stuff from long, long ago.
Yeah. And in fact, in the interview with Julian Glover, General Veers, afterwards you said, oh, Doug was, you know, reading the other scripts and Return of the Jedi. And he would have mentioned if General Veers was in the Return of the Jedi script. I'm pretty sure I did.
Did you?
I'm pretty sure I did. If I didn't do it on the show, it's a fact that I did it on Twitter when I was doing my live script reading, live tweeting, whatever the hell you'd want to call reading a script live, you know, as live as it could get. Yeah, General Veers was totally in Return of the Jedi.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he was even, like, clever and smart, and actually the trick that Han Solo pulled to get the Imperial troops out of the base, General Veers did to the Rebels.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I would have remembered that. That did not come up on the show.
Yeah, no, General Veers was like, they find, because there's a whole bunch of, it's not just like a scouting party on the Endor moon, it was like a whole bunch of rebels on the Endor moon building like a secret base. And so General Veers shows up in an AT-ST with like a whole bunch of Imperial troops, and they're like, all right, quick, wipe them all out. Pew, pew, pew. And they go and they just kill a whole bunch of them. They're like, all right, there's going to be more rebels coming. Get in their armor. Get in the rebel like uniforms, and everyone act like a rebel. And then when they show up, we just fucking kill them all. And it fucking works. Like, it's like Leia and Han barely escape, and that's how they get separated.
What happens to Veers? Does he die, or does he just fizzle out?
I don't recall. I think he just sort of fizzles out. They never say. And I guess it's hinted that he basically is either caught or killed during the battle, but there's no, like, I don't recall a death scene for Veers. So either he got away, or he was arrested.
Man, can you imagine, like, having a persistent, capable Imperial nemesis other than Darth Vader in this movie?
Veers, like, legit, was the only one who didn't screw up. Like, Veers did his job perfectly. The only thing that screwed up was the Emperor got cocky, and then both of the Death Stars above Coruscant, that's right, two Death Stars, both of them blew up, and then it's like, well, shit, I guess the war's over. You
know? I think Piet came close to that. Like, I don't think anything, he did anything wrong. He had some bad luck with, like, R2 knowing how to fix the hyperdrive and you know, the A-Wing getting through or whatever, but, like, I think that's the closest. But Veers is capable.
Yeah, and Jar Jarrod in the movie version is actually fine. Like, didn't really fuck up. Didn't have any shining glory moments, but also didn't entirely screw up. Just sort of followed orders.
And he had a deleted scene where like he fled in fear, didn't he?
Well, no, he had a deleted scene where he hesitated, and in that hesitation of firing the Death Star's cannon, that gave just enough time for Wedge and Lando to get in and blow it up. So, non-canonically, according to the deleted scene, Jar Jarrod did screw up only because he hesitated for a split second, but it canonically for the movie, then he's actually fine. But according to the script, he was actually Grand Moff Jar-Jarad and possibly a Sith in training. They didn't go into it. It was crazy.
What?
He called. Don't you remember any of this? I was telling you this.
No.
You got to read my tweets.
Okay,
then.
Okay. at Doug V. Banks on Twitter.
Yeah. Go back in time and read my tweets. He called Grand Moff Jar-Jarad behind closed doors, calls the Emperor master.
Huh.
And he's like, the Emperor confides in him some stuff. I don't know. It's strange, but we got a lot more to talk about.
We do. And I would never hesitate to have one of these discussions about Star Wars.
I will
shit that
divert
didn't happen.
At any time.
Anyway,
me, I'll tell
in
you.
In so with in regards to Solo, though, we did that interview archive episode because there wasn't a lot to report, but now there's quite a lot to report. So tickets are now available. They were made available at 12:01 a.m. on May the 4th, and according to the official website of the Cannes Film Festival, the runtime is 2 hours and 15 minutes. Now, we all had an easy time scoring tickets at that moment of the tickets being available. If you follow us on our Facebook or Twitter feeds, I don't know if maybe you didn't catch the memo, but there wasn't really much of an official memo about it, but we were hearing rumors. We were able to confirm it. So definitely do follow us, because if you wanted to get that head start, we got a heck of a head start. And I mean, I chose the first showing at my preferred theater in town, and I was the first seats to select from the theater. Like, it was uncontested. So seemingly, like, you know, no one was really excited to be at midnight buying Solo tickets, except that Fandango reports that Solo's advanced ticket sales, I guess people woke up, and within the first 24 hours are beyond what they were for Black Panther, and is second in 2018 pre-sales to only Infinity War.
Wow.
But it's crazy because that article in and of itself, or, you know, those announcements, has created a lot of like controversy between the Solo haters and like those that are like excited for it. It's, you know, they think it's like just a you know, PR bullshit that it's even doing well, that it's just to try to further the buzz for the film by saying it's doing well.
Can we reflect on that for a moment? Because yeah. We haven't really discussed the Solo haters on this show yet. I feel like it's kind of a recent phenomenon that's sort of like, you know, it's been bubbling up for a while and is sort of presenting itself. There's a lot of reasons to not want this film. We have outlined them extensively from the moment it was even first hinted at on this very program.
And I'll admit, I was a self-proclaimed Solo skeptic when they announced that there would be a Solo film.
Which is fine. Solo skeptic is fine, but
reasonable,
some of these, like,
in fact.
Yeah. It's just become a very toxic environment. Without seeing the movie, I guess what bothers me is that the difference between, like, if they announced like a trilogy of Han Solo books, like they've done twice before, or comics, everybody would be fine seeing it in those mediums. But for some reason, just because it's a movie, it creates a toxic fan environment because that's held to a different scale.
Yeah.
I guess just because of, I don't know what that is, movie experience, are movies like absolutely king when it comes to media? Like, I don't, or is it money? I have no idea. But for some reason, because this is a movie, if they screw it up, it's that much worse than if it was just a book or a comic.
Well, I mean, we do know that movie continuity in all cases trumps whatever's been written in the expanded universe. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been exposed to that much Solo hater toxicity, but I did see a YouTube video recently that was saying why Alden Ehrenreich was the worst choice to ever possibly be Han Solo. And I'm like, I don't know about that. I think given the amount of actors that are out there now who could perform and do it, I'd be hard pressed to pick someone else. But every person that this person recommended was an impressionist of Harrison Ford. And it's like, yeah, an impressionist can read a line sounding similar to another line reading. That's what an impression is. But acting is a very different thing. So I'm willing to give benefit of the doubt until I see the movie to see whether or not someone did a good job or not. But it was also like, he looks nothing like Han Solo. I'm like, he looks a little like Han Solo. Like, he looks more like Han Solo than I do, you know? Like, I don't really care. Like, people, this reminds me so much of when they announced Daniel Craig was going to be James Bond.
Oh, that's an interesting
comparison. I was actually going to bring up not Daniel Craig. I was just going to say, I wonder what the reaction was when they casted, you know, George Lazenby and Roger Moore as Bond, because that wasn't after just trying to get a second Sean Connery. And I don't think like Bond would have survived if they kept just getting a new Sean Connery.
Yeah, let's get Sean Connery. When I was up in the Catskills and I saw this guy do Frank Gorshin does a really good Sean Connery impression. We got to get him to do it. We can just have him do an impression the entire time. Be out of your freaking mind.
Yeah, and I'm not that Han Solo is the same character, and also like story continuity is much more important in this universe. So I can understand why you want someone that can do a Harrison Ford to some extent. But man, if you just tried to find someone that could do the voice and has the look and like, is that really that much better? Like I don't think there's ever been a series that's recasted that has successfully recasted because they just casted somebody exactly the same.
With the exception of maybe Men in Black 3.
Well, that was really good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
and also a little different because they were doing a time thing.
It was a joke. Yeah.
Man, did he do a good job. It's still stunning how great Josh Brolin was.
I still like, he needs to be best supporting actor. He should have won. Like just that.
Oh, yeah.
He freaking nailed it. But in that same vein, people kind of want the exact same thing. And these comments and these YouTube things I was seeing were like, oh, gosh, and, you know, not only does he not look like him, here's a clip from an unrelated movie where he's doing a completely different genre, and look at how he acts. And it's like, I don't even remember what movie it was from, but it wasn't Hail Caesar. And it's just him giving an emotional performance in the rain, and he's like, whatever. And like, this is Han Solo? I'm like, dude, fuck
you.
I know, and that's why I bring up Daniel Craig, because they did the same shit to Daniel Craig by playing clips from Layer Cake, where he's like, guns, I hate guns, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is your new Bond? It's like, get the hell out of here. They're an actor. They're doing, like, it's a different part. Like, that's like, it's the same shit when they said Michael Keaton was going to be Batman. Mr. Mom is going to be Batman? Get the hell out of here. Like, it never ends. It's just every 10 years this happens. I mean, when like
children, you don't know how the industry
Ben
works.
Affleck can't play Batman. What the hell? It's just,
well, he didn't do a great Daredevil.
I don't blame him for doing for that movie sucking. Like, you know, it was his performance was the least of that movie's problems.
Yeah, that's true.
But he was arguably my favorite part of Batman vs Superman. His performance, at least.
Sure.
You know, but it's, we've seen this all, and I don't know. I don't understand how you can live through all of that over these number of years, and then when it comes up again with Han Solo, you just immediately. It's the same argument. It's literally the same arguments.
Yeah, and this movie, it's up against a lot of weird, very just strange static in everything. I mean, like, here it is, only a few months after the prior Star Wars film, which was very divisive. And a little bit of the Denny's story that Doug and I didn't share when we were doing our episode where we reviewed the Solo menu at Denny's is that
more fun than it sounds.
the waitress came up to us wearing a Solo shirt, hearing that we'd ordered the whole Solo menu, and she was like, "So is this a new Star Wars movie?" Like,
yeah,
and we're like, and like, there's one so soon. My husband just rented the last one off of Redbox. It was scratched. Like,
yeah. if it's new, I gotta tell him because he would love to see a new Star Wars movie. We're like, oh yes, there will be a new Star, and is it about Han Solo? And it's just like, yes, the Solo logo is everywhere, and that's why I'm not blaming her. I'm blaming the poor marketing choices that they've done for this movie.
But that said, in the about a month since that episode happened, there's been a lot of Solo.
And
they've
been
pushing,
TV spots, more trailers. I think when we sat down to have that meal, there was really only one, maybe two teasers out. And it's, if you're not a huge Star Wars nerd and you're not listening to Star Wars podcasts and waiting for the movies to come out on YouTube and hitting refresh on your web browser every 5 minutes to get tickets, like, you're probably not even aware of what this movie's about or that it's even a young Han Solo. You just, it's easy to miss.
And not only do we have trailers now, we have full scene excerpts, actually.
Yeah.
And on this episode's page, we're going to be posting links to all of the ones that seem the most relevant. But we got some shout-outs to some special stuff, including a really wonderful 360-degree presentation of a clip from the Sabacc scene, or Sabacc. Do we know how we say it?
I've heard it both ways so much. And
we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, we'll find out. I actually wouldn't be surprised if Lando pronounces it both ways.
Well, like, this
Sabacc.
It's like
Sabacc.
I think you mean it's Sabacc. No, it's Sabacc, Solo. I'm pretty sure. I didn't invent the game, but I win it all the time.
Well, apparently there's a similar discussion about how to pronounce
right.
That's
why I bring it up. Yeah,
in the scene, because the entire scene was played at a convention recently. We'll go into that behind the blast doors. But so There's a 360 degree scene. You can just use your mouse to scroll around, or maybe even a VR helmet to look around from, like, you know, one end of the table. There's Lando right next to Therm Scissorpunch. On the other end, there's Han Solo, and they're at the part of the scene where the Falcon gets put on the line, and it's great. And all the characters all around them, from like the dirty female spacer to the giant cyclops dude looming over them and the shrimp guy, boy, it is such a great, fun scene. And it's so cool to see with that, with this dimension. I've never really seen a 360 presentation thing that I actually enjoyed this much.
Mm-hmm. Because it was more about showing off the 360 than it was about a, you know, cool little scene.
Yeah, it was just a great scene. It was perfect. It was a round table. It's perfect for this. It was made for this.
It is, and my only nitpick was I wish that instead of it being at the center of the table and you have to use your mouse to scroll, quick, I'm going to see what Han says. Oh, now I got to go back to what Lando says. If they had you as, like, the person in the middle playing cards, like that perspective where you could look side to side to see them, like as if you were at the table. But, you know.
True, but I do like...
I won't look at a gift horse in the mouth.
The full depth of spinning around, it rewards multiple viewings.
Sure.
I've watched it a number of times just for fun.
Just watching the aliens look around is great.
Yeah.
And the nice thing with the... If you watched it on phone, you don't need to use the mouse. You just move
spin
the phone.
In your
chair. So it was pretty smooth.
Sweet.
But I just stared at Scissor Punch the entire time.
Yeah, actually, one of our co-hosts on our Nerdy Show stuff, Brandon, he's the kind of dude who, when Disney's ruling the world, making a ton of money, in Star Wars, he was really mad at the last film, understandably so.
He rebels.
He rebels. Yeah, he does rebel. Mm-hmm. And he was mad. He was like, fuck this movie. I don't want to see it. He'd heard all these rumors about the movie, which we'll go into in a moment. And then he saw the Denny's trading card for Therm Scissorpunch. He was like, fuck it, I'm in.
Yeah.
This is everything I want. Therm Scissorpunch, if you're not aware, is basically a lobster man playing cards. And he's awesome.
More lobster than man.
Cerebral Paladin tweeted us that in the Force Awakens visual dictionary, it specifically says that Han won the Falcon off Lando while playing Corellian Spike, which is a variation of Sabacc that uses dice. And that's why we were curious in the past about, like, so what's the deal? Like, how could he win with these dice when...
If it's a card game.
Yeah, it's a card game. So it's a special variation. And maybe Han... We don't have confirmation of this, but maybe Han's going to be like, hey, let's play a version from my hometown, you know? With these dice.
And what's the deal with... There, people were saying that the dice that he hangs in the Falcon was the dice that he won the Falcon with.
Yeah.
But yet we see him with gold dice in his, like, speeder, like, earlier in the film?
Yeah, they're, like, they're his lucky charm. So, like, he just so happens to also win the game with them. Unless the visual dictionary is being contradicted now. But that's what the visual dictionary says for The Force Awakens.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess we'll see.
I guess we will see. Yeah, we got a full scene with the scene about Chewbacca's age in the Falcon. We get that entire scene, which is really nicely plays out. There's a Nissan commercial where L337's flying the Falcon, and it's like a full scene. And I don't know if it is for the Nissan commercial or is it in the movie. I can't tell.
Well, they did do a full... For Force Awakens, they had a Chewie BB-8 scene where they're on board Starkiller Base. That was like a full movie scene that really had nothing to do with anything. So I wouldn't put it past them just to be able to, you know, do that.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the movie. But I will say, though, just from experience of watching a lot of TV this weekend, that commercial plays constantly. To the point that, like, even I am a little sick of it.
Well, I've still never seen it outside the internet, so okay.
And that little dog was really cute. It looked like a little Chewbacca.
Yeah, actually, that was a very cute dog.
There's also a tour that Donald Glover gives of the Falcon, which is really neat because you kind of get... I mean, gosh, that looks like a complete set. Like, they actually built the interior without, like, with probably hidden seams to move the crew in and out of, but it seems like it's like a closed unit. Like, they built the interior of the ship.
What if they filmed that at the Falcon that's at Disneyland?
They did not.
I know they didn't. Just like, what greater way to promote it? It's like, we actually filmed this at Disneyland on the Falcon. It's like, wow.
That's like in Kamen Rider where they're like, all the props are actually the toys.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the biggest thing that came out was a featurette called Becoming Solo, and it is full of all kinds of scenes we haven't seen before and great perspectives from the cast and crew. Can't recommend it enough. In terms of talking about the actual story beats for the movie, that's all going to be behind the blast doors because we're pretty sure that the Solo Monopoly game gift-wrapped at us this entire film's timeline.
Quite possibly.
So look forward to that if you want some spoilers. And we'll also be going into some of the scenes in the featurette that are kind of new to us. In another trailer, we also got a first look at Warwick Davis's character, which we'll link to in this episode's page. And we recently found out that the character we'd formerly been calling Enfys Nest, who's a female bounty hunter, mercenary or something, leader of the Cloud Rider gang, is actually pronounced Enfys, kind of like emphasis. So it's Enfys Nest, not Enfys Nest.
We'll see how they pronounce it in the movie, because all I know is good old Uncle George called them the Goongas.
This comes straight from Lawrence Kasdan. Make it that what you will.
Tatooine, Dantooine.
The Star Wars collecting group Yak Face pointed out that Solo is actually using Star Wars 1313 concept art. That's the speculated on last LucasArts game that was never released, Star Wars 1313, set in the underbelly of the Star Wars universe. We'll link to some concept art showing a group of vagrants gathered around a burnt out astromech hulk, which is exactly what we see in one of the earliest Solo trailers.
Nothing goes to waste.
There's a company called Design by Humans, and they have a Star Wars license where they produced a bunch of Solo-related shirts, and in this batch of Solo-related shirts, there's a shirt called Galaxy Sunset, which depicts some kind of sailcraft spaceship that we've never seen before. We've never seen anything remotely like it in any of the Solo stuff so far, but this was released in a Solo batch of shirts. It is definitely Star Wars merchandise.
It looks similar to some of the designs of the Kashyyyk craft in Revenge of the Sith. So maybe we get a quick little, dropping off Chewie's family. Mm. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So that's the only thing I could possibly gather just from the shirt itself.
It's a cool design. I know that much, but boy, it is so out of sync with everything else we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Now, that's essentially where the Solo talk ends, but there was a recent long article on Esquire about Alden Ehrenreich, who's playing Han Solo, and it is the best source for dispelling a lot of the rumors that have been circulating this film. We had Lord and Miller, the directors, fired from the set. Ron Howard took over. There were all these crazy rumors about Alden Ehrenreich being so bad that they had to call in a acting coach. And all this other stuff coming from unnamed sources. There's also the rumor that when they announced that Ron Howard or that Lord Miller had been fired and Ron Howard was hired, the crew applauded,
right.
Then so excited were they that the tyranny of Lord and Miller was over.
That sounds really unprofessional if that was to believe to be true.
Right. So this, fully aware that he can only say so much with the NDAs in place about everything that's been going on here, this is one of the most telling interviews so far. I highly recommend it. We'll link to it on this episode's page. But yeah, I heard someone was telling me recently, this Han Solo film, it's gonna be bad, right? They fired the director,
the director,
the director, and then brought in some other guy, and then and then Han Solo was so bad they had to have an acting coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is gonna be a bad movie, right? And I'm like, wow, that's all wrong. Mm-hmm. That's all super duper wrong. We've speculated on these rumors in the past, trying to figure out if there's any truth to them. But at the end of the day, it seems like mostly these are, people somewhere in the cast or crew who are relatively uninformed selling some, you get, when you're an informant, you get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So if the websites think that your shit is real, you're going to get some money.
And on the note of the acting coach, there's no explanation as to who the acting coach was for.
Actually, there is now.
Oh, there is now?
Yeah.
Who was it for specifically then?
Okay, so in regards to this, it was writer-director Maggie Kiley, who she was brought in allegedly to work specifically on Alden's performance.
Mm-hmm.
Alden said in the Esquire interview, she was part of a conversation that happened for a couple of weeks at one point, but that was basically it. And Lord Miller, who were also interviewed for this discussion about Alden taking on the role of Han Solo, they said that Kylie is someone they've worked with on previous films, and they brought her on Solo as a resource for the entire cast, as well as themselves.
See, what that sounds like to me, and I don't want to get too presumptuous, but that to me sounds like there was overall miscommunication from directors to actors on what was wanted. So this is like an interpreter is what it sounds more like an emotional interpreter of like, well, try it that way. Try it this way. This is what they're looking for, especially for someone that they were familiar with.
Right.
That's what that sounds like.
Yeah. And also like an acting coach who's also a writer director.
Yeah. No coincidence there.
Yeah.
But on the note of the supposed, they brought in an acting coach for Alden's performance was so bad. One of the arguments I'd heard, which was so self-contradictory, it made my head explode, was, well, they could totally hire an impressionist, because if an impressionist can do Han Solo, a Harrison Ford, so well, they can come in, do the impression. Disney can easily have the money to hire an acting coach to teach that person to act. And then, like, 2 minutes later, they're saying, can you believe they had to hire an acting coach to get Alden Ehrenreich to be able to do this part? I'm like, are you out of your mind? Like, where does it end? There's, like, this constant goalpost moving. You can't win.
Don't be that. Hey, folks. I know it can be fun to be that person, but don't be that person. Please don't be that person.
How is it fun to be miserable?
Boy, you don't see a lot of people who this is a whole psychiatric discussion here.
Oh, I see miserable people all the time bemoaning everything about Star Wars these days, but it's like, it's not fun. How can it be fun?
It is a kind of entertainment.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
Oh, that sucks.
I mean, hey, there's plenty of problems with Star Wars. There's plenty of problems with the film industry, but ultimately we have fun talking about it. That's why we're here.
I'm not saying love everything mindlessly.
Yeah, fuck no.
No,
we don't.
I am not saying that at all. I'm just saying, like, to stew in your, you know, in your own hatred is kind of what the antithesis of Star Wars is all about.
Yeah, see, because
it's the path to the dark side.
When you actively think that something's not worth your time and you should, like, and it's just, you know, like, that it's gross to you, stop caring. That's what you should do. You should move on.
I can't remember who it was. It was a famous person who says the definition of a fanatic is someone who refuses to change their mind and can't change the subject.
Yeah. So rest of the rumors, the applauding thing, Ehrenreich says that's bullshit. For a crew to do that, that would mean they hated Lord Miller, which was not the case by any stretch. According to Esquire magazine, everyone involved is cagey about how much of Lord Miller's material ended up in the final cut, understandably. But the big reveal from this article, whether it amounts to something or not, Ehrenreich is signed on for 3 films. So that's something we've talked about for a while, the Solo trilogy.
What about Donald Glover? How many films?
I think it depends on the reaction and the kind of money, because then they can start, you know, like, he has a lot on his plate right now, and I can imagine he doesn't want to commit to much, but yeah. I think if Disney decides that they have a big pile of money that they could throw at him, I'm sure he would do more films.
Everyone go buy Lando merchandise.
Well, let's see how he does. I mean, everything we've seen so far has been, like, fantastic. And also, the other thing, too, is I see a lot of, like, he's doing a great job as Billy Dee compared to, you know, how Ehrenreich's doing a Solo. And even if you...
It's as different.
This is just conjecture. If you really paid attention, I'm sure there's a lot of nuance to just... It's not just him being a Billy Dee Williams person. I think it's him bringing something different.
He has a natural
and you
charisma.
Like what he's bringing. Exactly. It's Donald Glover. People loved him prior to this film, and I think everyone's just excited to see him in a Star Wars film, and he's going to do great. But I wouldn't say it's just because he's doing an impression. I think it's because he's doing his own thing, and people are into what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. So now we're going to talk more about Solo, but that's going to be behind the blast doors. Let's talk about Star Wars Resistance, the latest in a series of I told you so's from State of the Empire. So we had a rumor about the name Star Wars Resistance being trademarked. We had Dave Filoni at Star Wars Celebration several years ago saying he wanted to do
Top Gun style,
Gun sort of Star Wars show. Granted, he said it was about Imperials.
Yeah. He said his dream project would be to have it be about Imperials.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Disney's like, you can't have flying space Nazis. You can't have that be the thing for kids.
What I was wrong about is I was wrong about when it was going to be announced, but I'm happy that it was like, you know, I said that I think it's going to happen before Solo. It did happen before Solo.
Yep.
And it is coming out this fall on Disney XD. This is a series that takes place just before the events of The Force Awakens. And that I would not have predicted, because that's a strange, you know, Star Wars Rebels was limited in some capacity by the fact that we knew that inevitably these characters were going to have to be taken off the playing field in some regard before A New Hope happened. And now we have this even more limited arena of taking place before the events of Force Awakens, because the Poe Dameron comic has taken place extensively before the events of the Force Awakens involving these exact characters. So,
and at the same time, we need more context of the First Order, what's going on.
Yeah,
know.
And this would be, I mean, if I, holy crap, like, you mean Dave Filoni gets to be the person who cleans up the mess of the new trilogy?
Cleaned up some of the Clone Wars stuff.
Okay. I'm in, but also, like, kind of freaked out, because if anything, I thought Star Wars Resistance was going to be post Last Jedi, not post Force Awakens. Anyway, this series centers on Kazuda Ziano, a young pilot recruited by the Resistance and tasked with a top-secret mission to spy on the growing threat of the First Order. It will also feature the beloved droid BB-8 alongside ace pilots, colorful new characters, and appearances by fan favorites including Poe Dameron and Captain Phasma, voiced by Oscar Isaac and Gwendolyn Christie. So, Filoni is the creator of this when he left Rebels mid last season, which he didn't really leave exactly. They just hadn't announced that it was over yet.
Mm-hmm.
He moved on to this, and he says, the idea for Star Wars Resistance came out of my interest in World War II aircraft and fighter pilots. My grandfather was a pilot, and my uncle flew and restored planes, so that's been a big influence on me. There's a long history of high-speed racing in Star Wars, and I think we've captured that sense of excitement in an anime-inspired style, which is something the entire team has been wanting to do for a long time. Which comes back to another point that we made earlier in prior episodes, is that we felt that when this inevitable fighter pilot show happens, it will be largely inspired by that one fan-made TIE fighter short film.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't seen any art from this yet, not really, just a logo with BB-8 and a ship. But I think this is saying, like, this is an anime-influenced show with pilots, you say? I've seen that before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With the Empire.
Did they hire that dude? They may have hired that. I would have hired that dude.
Yeah. I can just imagine. Be like, Dave, you got to see this YouTube short. Oh, there's so many YouTube shorts about stuff. No. This is a fan-made thing. You just got to see it. And then playing that and seeing his jaw drop.
Yeah. My dreams.
Yeah.
he held his hat in his hands and he crushed it.
Just ringed it in his hands. Like,
we've got a lot of returning people from Clone Wars and Rebels. Art directions by Amy Beth Christensen, executive producers Athena Portillo and Justin Ridge. But they're also bringing in Brandon Allman from Nickelodeon's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is cool. And we got a voice cast. I don't really know what to make of it at all. The top billing goes to Christopher Sean, who's from Days of Our Lives, Susie McGrath from EastEnders, Scott Lawrence from Legion, and Myrna Velasco from Elena of Avalor. I don't have much of a frame of reference for the vast majority of those folks, but this, there's like in sort of what you would consider supporting cast billing, there are some known entities there, such as Josh Brenner from Silicon Valley, Donald Faison, how do you pronounce his name? Turk from Scrubs.
Yeah.
Bobby Moynihan, Jim Rash from Community. So that's. I'm excited about those supporting cast members. I don't know, maybe major cast members. I don't know. I just know that people I didn't know were in front of them, and they're in the back.
We'll have to see if anyone comes back from Rebels.
I don't think so.
What? No.
Something that kind of got lost in the shuffle that I forgot to bring up to both of you. During, like, it was kind of everything was coming fast and heavy with the Solo stuff. Is there were two job postings on Lucasfilm for Lucasfilm Animation. One was for a 3D animator, and another was for a production accountant that required them to juggle multiple productions and multiple seasons. So it's very possible that there is a different 3D series in development that could continue the story that's kind of the Ahsoka through line. I don't know if the Ahsoka through line is going to continue in this show.
Well, this can be anime influenced and also be in 3D. Now, I speculate it's going to be a 2D show, but they haven't said that or not. I think it's going to be 2D because it's cheaper, but if they are hiring for a 3D person, who knows? And of course, when they say anime, typically that is 2D, but not definitively.
True, but also I think requiring the production accountant to juggle multiple productions, and we all know for the streaming like platform that they definitely want like you know, they want Star Wars content. And I think did they establish that Resistance is coming to XD and not the streaming platform?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like they're going to have something animated for the streaming platform. And my gut tells me that they may take a timeout from the Ahsoka story for a little while.
I feel like, you know how the Clone Wars didn't really come back until season two of Rebels. I feel like season two of Resistance, we're going to see Sabine's
request.
I don't
know if they're going to hold Thrawn back all the way for the Resistance. I think that's still an Imperial story.
But it's an Imperial story that may involve the First Order.
Maybe. I don't know. 30 years is a long time.
It is a long time. It's a very long time, especially for a show that takes place, quote, just before the events of The Force Awakens.
Right. I mean, Ahsoka was missing for 13 years between Revenge of the Sith and Rebels. So, I mean, you're talking about double that. You know, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
I'm just saying, Ahsoka disappears, shows up. She's like, you know, this like sage Jedi now. I'm thinking Ezra disappears, comes back, is evil, comes back being bad. That's the only explanation.
I'll kill you.
I'm telling you, it lines up. You only want to kill me because it lines up and it makes, there's a lick of sense involved. If it was complete BS, you'd be like, oh, sure thing, Doug. Ha ha.
Eh.
I'll only accept it if he's Snoke's boss.
Snoke's boss? He's someone like, pulling the strings?
Yep.
He trained Snoke.
It still kind of surprises me that they didn't adjust the timeline of the prior six films to make it more reasonable. I mean, the thing they should have done was make the Clone Wars for sure longer, but also like maybe the gap between Empire and Jedi.
And speaking of time gaps, one of the things that further makes the time period for Resistance a little weird is that, like, not only has the Poe Dameron comic thoroughly established things happening in those moments just before The Force Awakens, with this main character of this show nowhere in sight, as far as I know. I mean, they could have been shuffled in the background and be like, whoa, look at this. Your mind's blown. Yeah. But the Poe comic has actually just taken a time jump. It's now post Last Jedi. So, they're not playing there anymore for, I guess, for good reason. They're giving Resistance space.
Yeah.
But they didn't leave much room.
Do you think they're going to continue in that? From what I understand, at least what I've been told, it's the, you know, what Black Squadron was up to during Last Jedi and the reason why they weren't around. Or at least that's the hints I'm getting from the Marvel, the kind of the blurbs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that ongoing is coming to a conclusion, or do you think they're going to let them play in that era for a little while?
I don't know, but I do recall a while back, Charles Soule said, I can't believe they just approved the thing that they let me do for Poe.
Right.
So we're going to get a little bit more. It's still a well-selling comic. And yeah, it could end at any point in time. But that takes us to episode 9. Because we actually have some things to say about that. And the number one thing is that John Boyega mentioned in an interview with the Press Association, I can't wait to start shooting the next and final leg of the franchise. The first step is growing out my hair, so you can wait for the trailer to see why. And that is music to my ears, because that implies an actual time jump.
Mm-hmm.
What they should have done between the last two films that could have fixed so many things about the writing process for that movie. There's going to be a time jump. Thank the maker.
We're going to be upset when we find out it's just because there's a Finn clone, because they did clone some of the stormtroopers and the clone has long hair.
That
is like, as a side effect of the suit he was wearing to heal him. It's like, oh, your skin regrows so fast. Your hair regrows fast too. Pop.
Ugh. Well,
I better, BB-8, help me shave this off. Like a little buzzsaw comes out.
BB-8's such a Switch Army knife. He'd have clippers, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, he's a hair dryer. He's got everything.
So basically, I think that definitively says there is a time jump, and that's very exciting. And that means that, much like, you know, any of the other trilogy films, there's actually a cool, you know, window of time to play around, to develop things out, to build a status quo for the galaxy in which this final conflict can take place. And yes, it does have to bear the weight of dealing with tying up all the plot threads initiated by the first two films of the trilogy that are still very unresolved.
And we all know JJ is really good at tying up loose plot threads.
Yeah, he's
known for it.
Yeah.
I heard a very nasty rumor that we could probably just say is speculation. Rumor is probably the wrong word. But that episode 9 is actually going to be a 2-part film.
Pulling a Harry Potter on you?
Mm-hmm.
I sincerely hope not.
I mean,
I think I'd prefer two films that were good instead of like 1 3-hour movie that's blah.
If they did 9 and 10 and were like, yeah, we know it's not a trilogy, but when does it ever matter that it was actually 3 films? I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. That's fair.
Yeah.
But not if it's episode 9 part 1 and episode 9 part 2.
No, that's messed up.
That's stupid.
No, that's really stupid. Oh, man. That's so stupid they're going to do that. Pulling some Final Fantasy shit.
Well, marketing wise, I think that's proven to be a big hit with, you know, I mean, they've constantly done that. What, Harry Potter, Twilight, even like that's kind of how they've been marketing Avengers.
Well, actually, they initially did that with Infinity War and then did not do it with Infinity War, which I think proves that they are banking. Disney specifically thinks that that's actually a bad idea.
Yeah. You can't say episode 9 part 1, episode 9 part 2. That's just crazy.
Well, remember, they haven't really used the episode numbers very heavily in any of the marketing. I mean, these movies have been Star Wars The Force Awakens and Star Wars The Last Jedi. You don't really see 7 right. and 8
except
anywhere
for,
except for fans talking about it the movie starting.
But even before the title is revealed, even Disney refers to them as episode whatever. You know, like before it was Force Awakens, it was episode 7.
Sure, but I'm just saying once... It's not like the prequels that were actually Star Wars : episode 1 - The Phantom Menace episode 2, The Attack of the... Like, once the name of these films is out, you don't see Disney refer to them as 7 or 8 anymore.
Yeah. I mean...
Just so long as in the title crawl, it doesn't say episode 9 part 1. That's so dumb.
Yeah. Well, and you know...
I think their concern would be going to a part 1 and part 2 and maybe not using that is... You know, they promised that this was a trilogy and that this is this saga's, you know, this generation's trilogy, but they may want another series, like another film with this core group. And so they don't want to make you think, oh, there's going to be a second trilogy with this group. You know, they just want to, you know, get in a fourth film.
Well, I mean, George originally wanted to do like 5 movies with Han, Leia and Luke and Chewie and Lando. Like after Empire, like... Return of the Jedi was just the final film, like that's like 4 films combined into one, because they wanted you know, George wanted to have Boba Fett be like a bigger villain, and Jabba the Hutt was an even bigger villain, and it was like a whole side thing, but meanwhile they get distracted trying to save Han over the course of 2 movies and then coming back and doing the big ending with the Death Star. I don't know. So it's like this, there's precedent for more than just 3 movies, you know, for like a core group of characters for a generation.
I think also, you know, doing a part 1, part 2 thing is helpful for production purposes, because like filming them back to back, you know, you can get everybody in and just, and then, you know, you can release them, you know, 6 to 8 months after each other, as opposed to like
trying to get the clear.
I think
schedule,
a reason why,
you know?
I think a reason why Infinity War went from Infinity War part 1 to part 2 to just Infinity War and then unnamed fourth Avengers film is because they weren't able to lock everyone in to film it all at once, and everybody had to go leave and come back later to do all the Avengers 4 stuff. So it ended up kind of being separate productions, so to speak.
Huh. That's messy.
But that's a reasonable
reason. Yeah. One other episode 9 thing, which is very tangential, very weird. A unnamed source spoke with the New York Daily News saying inexplicably, of all the things they could say about episode 9, that Yoda's returning and will mentor Rey. Out of the blue.
If it's an anonymous source, it's got to be true.
This is the most bottom of the barrel stuff, but kind of like, you know, okay, sure, like Yoda, great. But we do know that from interviews, Frank Oz will gladly come back for the voice, but has no interest in puppeteering ever again, and was actually shocked when they pulled out a Yoda puppet and were like, is this good for the Last Jedi?
I love Frank Oz, but he's getting old, man. You got to fly him out there just for him to do the puppet thing again.
He said choreographing the scenes for Yoda is so like cumbersome.
Yeah. That,
like, why would you do it?
Yeah.
So that's the verdict on that. So yeah, sure, maybe. Maybe that's a thing. And if you did, you heard it here first, you know? Or on New York Daily News. Anyway, Forces of Destiny, the animated series on Disney's YouTube channel, has been very, very, very spotty. But there's been some great episodes recently, actually. And as far as continuity goes, some crazy shit happened, folks. We're going to link to all the, I guess, the second half of season two. There's two awesome Star Wars Rebels shorts, one with Darksaber era Sabine and her brother, and one with Ahsoka and Blaster Saber era Ezra, which explains a little bit about where the saber came from, actually. They're both great. And if you want more Rebels, yeah, this feels
for about, 2 minutes.
maybe I'm wrong, but these feel longer than normal.
Hmm.
They have body and substance to them in a way that many Forces of Destiny shorts don't.
Mm-hmm.
So highly, highly advise those. Also, super weird, the snowspeeder chase on Starkiller Base that was deleted, the deleted scene, has been added back to continuity via Forces of Destiny.
Nothing goes to waste.
I'm wondering,
what's weird though is like deleted scenes from like Jakku and stuff, like those made it into like the Force Awakens novel or were like flashbacks in the comic. But what's strange is like that snowspeeder's chase never like made it back in anywhere until now.
Yeah, the only place it was represented was in the action figures.
Yeah.
So I'm actually really curious about how they assembled this. Like, I'm wondering, I don't know how much of it they filmed to begin with. I haven't really perused the deleted scenes of The Force Awakens, but I'm wondering, like, did they even need to record new voices for this? Did they already have ADR from, like, Finn and Rey?
Maybe.
And it was definitely already storyboarded. So, like, did they have to do anything to make this? I'm curious. Aside from, actually animate it.
No matter what the answer to that question is, we're not going to see Constable Zuvio in Forces of Destiny. So just don't even hold out hope.
You don't know that, Doug.
I'm pretty confident saying.
He and Rey have had some genuine moments in Star Wars Adventures, so.
Like what?
Hanging out. Yeah. Like,
hell, what a genuine moment. Hanging out.
No, grumbling about things, interacting, talking about what a douchebag Unkar Plutt is,
Ugh.
They're the two like lawful good people in that area of Jakku. They have to hang out.
It's like, do you like it here, Constable Zuvio? Don't you ever dream of going somewhere else?
No, I love sand. It's so warm and it just covers you like a warm blanket.
Hey man, don't talk trash about Zuvio. Just don't.
I didn't talk trash. I'm just saying don't expect him to be in it because other people don't care.
Right. Here's my big takeaway from these Forces of Destiny things, though. Princess Kanisa from Ewoks is in two of these episodes.
Say what?
Yeah, man. It's ridiculous. There's a little pink hooded Ewok, couldn't be anybody else. It's definitely her. Not named, but Wikipedia has these appearances listed in the canon section. So it's on. Chopper enlists her to shoot down some TIE fighters on the Ghost.
Oh, God. No. What?
And she also, she and Wicket are both talking to Luke and Leia. They're like, we got to reset our traps. And they're like, what? What the hell? We defeated the Empire. What do we need to reset the traps for?
We need to eat.
Well, and this hulking thing that looks vaguely like a Duloc, like it's as tall as an AT-ST, it starts trashing the forest, and they're like, and it's this weird moment of like, oh, okay, so the Ewoks actually knew how to build these traps beforehand. These didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah,
these defenses are hunting maneuvers in place for killing giants.
Yeah.
Which is,
well, it's been established in the other movies that there's giant monsters roaming around them there.
Well, I think that's what it was. I think it's a Gorax from
Gorax?
From the Ewok films. Yep.
Okay. It's been a while since I've watched the first one.
We're gonna have to watch both.
Yeah, they dragged like a lot of the like Ewok cartoons and Ewok movies back into canon with the season of Force of Destiny, which is awesome.
And here's the deal. So I looked up like the princess.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know, what's she been up to lately? Anything else? Yeah, actually. She got up to some stuff with Poe Dameron's mom in a 2017 book called Star Wars on the Frontline by Daniel Wallace.
What?
Yeah.
Now she's a senator in the Republic Senate, the new Republic Senate.
No, she did take over for her dad. She's chief of the Ewoks in the future. I don't know where that's established. Maybe that story. I'm not sure.
Oh, sure.
That was her role in the cartoon. And she was a princess.
Yeah, that's just been confirmed somewhere in the new continuity. I don't know where, but she's a character. She's in there, and I guess we got to check out On the Front Lines, which is like
it was a reference book.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
I thought it was a novel. My mistake.
Daniel Wallace he does reference stuff, and yeah, it was came out after Rogue One.
Huh. Well. Not in Forces of Destiny, but pertaining to pals from Endor all the same. Matt, you found something in the Han and Lando book, Last Shot.
Yeah. In a starport, Han and Lando push past a group of Teek.
Now, the character Teek from the second Ewoks film, he's called Teek, but he is also a Teek.
Yes.
I didn't know that Teek was the plural form of Teek, like fish and fish.
Well, the specific line is, Han took off into the bazaar, pushing his way through a crowd of teak and dodging a lumbering culp, which is something that's never been referenced any other time than just there.
Mm. And also, in that same scene, and I'm just throwing this speculation out there to just get it out there so if it's proven correct that it's on record, but they come across a Toydarian fortune teller.
Uh-huh.
Has no wings. They looked like they were, like, amputated. If that Toydarian shows up in Batu as the toy shop owner that we've been hearing about, I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, I mean, that would make a lot of sense because one of the things we said is how are they going to have an animatronic Toydarian who's flying?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
How does a Toydarian, I guess the Toydarian who doesn't have wings can sit on a hovercraft like Yoda did because, you know, they're not really made for walking.
Yeah. Also interesting that it was a whole crowd of Teak, and I don't know that ever happened in the prior continuity that they're, you know, they ever spent time on an abundance of teaks.
I don't think teaks really showed up anywhere, because I'm probably very wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure only featured in Ewoks and in Star Tours.
Speaking of, just a brief aside with the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge theme park, we mentioned in a past episode that there was a conference where they detailed some of the tech going into the Millennium Falcon ride in terms of the video tech. Well, the footage of that presentation has been released, and we'll link to it on this episode's page. You will actually be flying the Millennium Falcon. So for that, they've created a super detailed 3D environment to fly around in. And what they showcase here is a demo environment, but the fact that you could, like, bump into something and it would fall over.
Right.
Like, there's... this is going to be wild. This is like... This is a ride, but an experience, but maybe also a video game.
Yeah, they haven't been very clear on how much control you actually have, but they're hinting that probably more than we're expecting.
Yeah, and now we're expecting quite a lot.
Yeah.
In regards to comics, I've got a lot of comic stuff I want to talk about behind the blast doors in case you're following them and don't want spoilers. But I just want to say that Kieran Gillen is still killing it doing Star Wars. If you're not reading Star Wars comics... You should read these Star Wars comics. There's been some incredible stuff happening of synergy between Charles Soule's Vader and the Gillen storyline that's going on right now. So what's happening is Darth Vader takes place just after episode 3, and the Darth Vader story is about taking down Mon Cala and like it, doing what the Empire can to place this prideful planet under their heel. And there's Jedi there like hiding out, and there's King Leechar from the Clone Wars and all these problems going around, and Vader's there with Inquisitors. It's a cool story, but then simultaneous to the story in Star Wars, they're telling the tale of how the rebels get Mon Cal into the fight after A New Hope, after the victory of the Death Stars, and all the things based on what's happened in this Darth Vader story that's still ongoing, what they're having to do, the length they're having to go to free that planet from tyranny and help the people feel comfortable having an uprising. And they're all working synergistically with each other, and I've seldom seen something happen so so well like that in like, you know, licensed comics especially. So what you want to do is you want to start with Darth Vader Volume 3, The Short-Term War. That's one of Gillen's era Darth Vader, not Charles Soule's Darth Vader that's going on right now. And then you're going to jump into Star Wars Volume 7, The Ashes of Jedha, the first Gillen Star Wars volume. So you get all this establishment about some background characters pertaining to the Mining Guild in Darth Vader. And then you jump into this post-A New Hope sidestep sequel thing to Rogue One. And from there, just take off. That's all you need. And keep reading, because Star Wars is so good right now. That is it. Before we go behind the blast doors, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Cap Blackard.
And I'm at Doug V. Banks.
And I'm at Matthew Spill.
If you do want to get spoilery, not just behind our blast doors, but also interacting online, we have not only is there a Facebook page for State of the Empire, but we also have our Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group where we post all the latest stuff as it's happening, have discussions with you fine folks. And right now, we need to let you know that this show could not be possible without your support. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. We're but one Star Wars podcast in a whole galaxy of Star Wars podcasts, and if we are to have any kind of relevance in this cockamamie world, you are our only hope. So please do rate and review us on iTunes, or also check out Podchaser, where you can not only rate and review series, but also tag them for future people to discover them, and also rate and review specific episodes. And if you really like us, then consider throwing some money our way. We are still recording from the Nerdy Show Network studios, so the funds that you contribute towards the Nerdy Show Network, we might be a consequence show now, but our fun money at State of the Empire, our production costs are still pertaining to us operating as an adjacent podcast of the Nerdy Show Network. So do go to patreon.com/nerdyshow and consider donating at least a dollar. And there's all kinds of State of the Empire perks that are also there, deleted scenes and, well, not scenes, but deleted conversations, extended discussions, and so on and so forth. But now, it's time to open the blast doors.
Open the blast doors! Open the blast doors!
I'm going to start with Poe Dameron. Poe Dameron 25. This is a pretty monumental moment here, because for the entirety of the Poe Dameron series, he's been looking for Lor San Tekka. And I assumed, like I think most people assumed, that the end of that quest happened on Jakku at the beginning of The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Totally fucking wrong. Poe Dameron actually successfully retrieves Lor San Tekka, and he interacts with Leia, he interacts with Poe, and then Lor's like, oh, you're looking for Luke? I don't know where he is, but I have some ideas. Give me a ship and I'll go take care of it. And that's where that happens. So then following issue 25, that's where things jump ahead to post The Last Jedi. But in this process, like everything revolving around Lor San Tekka in this series has given a lot of emphasis to some things that we were thinking about in the orbit of The Last Jedi and what is exactly happening with the Force in the new trilogy and how nothing really works the way we expect it to, and everything's very polarized and crazy. And certainly, I mean, it's very likely that this is a no prize on Charles Soule's part, the writer of, like, you know, helping make the Star Wars universe work a bit more. But his work has also been very heavily informed by collaborating with the story group, and this might all be, you know, just the right place for this information. So at the start of issue 25, Lorsen Tekka was previously kidnapped by Terex, Poe's nemesis, for lack of a better word. And in order to hide Tekka from anyone discovering where he is, Terex dumped him in a spacesuit and left him to drift in the stars, with only him being able to, like, know where his beacon was to go pick him up. So Lore's out there thinking he's going to die, and he's recording a monologue, and it gives all this clarity to the nature of the Force, in specifically the time of the new trilogy. He says, "I cannot touch the Force. I can only study it. And so all of my conclusions might be wrong. But I think in some ways that the distance has helped me move towards an understanding. I see the Force differently than a Jedi might. Even if I cannot touch it, I can certainly say that the Force touches me, as it does all beings. It moves like the sea. It has tides. Sometimes it recedes from the galaxy, and its influence can barely be felt. And then it rushes back, and the great certainties become uncertain, and all is change. It's as if, when the Force is prominent, those who see it can reshape the galaxy as they choose. I believe we are about to re-enter such a period now. Force-related sites across the galaxy have become active, expectant. Something is coming. Light and dark will battle yet again. I've lived long enough to know this. Either side can win."
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought so.
I want to hear Max von Sydow read it.
I know, and I really considered trying to do a Max von Sydow impression, but I just...
No one can.
I just can't. It would have been an embarrassment to all of us.
But if you could just be an impressionist, then you could play...
Oh, yeah, that'd be just as good. Yeah.
In a prequel film.
May as well, right? And then we can get Disney to hire, you know, an acting coach, you know, to, you know, iron out any of the other problems.
That's true. Yeah, that's like magic.
Yeah.
Well, just...
Guaranteed to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So when Lore meets with Leia, you know, she asks him to track down Luke, and he's like, "Yeah, okay, give me a ship, and I'll take care of it." But before he does that, he has a conversation with Poe, and they hadn't really had a moment to have, like, they'd known that they were, like, in the orbit of each other, but had never had, like, a real moment together. This is what he says to Poe: "Everything does not hinge on Luke Skywalker, despite what his sister believes. Oh, the Jedi is important, certainly, but he is not everything. Fate does not revolve entirely around lightsabers and those who wield them." And then he looks up to the stars and he says, "It all seems so enormous, no? Immense? Unending? But it's not. The trick is not to think about the void. Think about the lights. Do you know what binds all those lights together?" And Poe says, "I don't have to be a Jedi to know that. The Force." And Lore says, "In a way, but I've come to see it differently over time. Look again." He says, "Us. The Force is all of us." And then Lore affirms that. So that points to that, the broom boy message of things.
Mm-hmm.
That the changing nature of the Force, the nobodies who become somebody, individuals like Poe Dameron, who grew up in the shadow of a Force tree and has been influenced in ways heretofore unexplained, but severely hinted at since he's such a good pilot and seems to be riding on luck alone. Granted that this is, of course, still, in terms of writing, the Poe Dameron who didn't inadvertently kill the entire resistance, basically, but, you know...
That reminds me of good expanded universe prequel era stuff of, like, looking at the mixed messaging as, like, the movies continue to change and then, like, adapting prequel, like, stuff that takes place beforehand to sort of, like, better fit with, like, you know, Force Awakens was taking us in one direction and Last Jedi kind of put a big kibosh on that. And then this is a good way to kind of, like, mesh it all together just before Force Awakens starts. Like, it's pretty good. I like it, actually.
Yeah, I did too. Charles Soule, he's a good writer, and this whole 25-issue journey of Poe and Lore, it's gone to a lot of different places, but it feels so very valid. Like, specifically, that storyline culminating in 25. In addition to developing the characters of Black Squadron, and enough that I'm really excited because I think that Soule's work is going to be highly reflected in Star Wars Resistance. How could it not?
Right.
But now, let's move on to something very fucking different. Dr. Aphra, specifically issue 18. This book is crazy. Dr. Aphra is a bad person. Things are so nuts in this book. Okay, so Aphra has kidnapped Hera. Hera's being used as a hostage, as collateral. They're trying to get into this place called Hive Base 1, which is a classified Tarkin Initiative facility for Imperial R&D. Aphra's been rolling with a group of mercenaries, one of whom is partially cybernetic and is missing his head entirely, but somehow functions mentally 100% fine. So he's like, yeah, it's weird. He's like, he's a thick dude with no head, and can store weapons inside of his body like one of those Ninja Turtle action figures, the storage shell turtles. Anyway, so she says, hey, that's some pretty neat cybernetic work. Who did this? And the answer, Dr. Cornelius Evazan.
Oh, boy.
No. This is Kieran Gillen and Simon Spurrier attempting to fix the Rogue One problem. So at this point in continuity, currently has a death sentence in 13 systems within this Dr. Aphra book.
So his death sentence gets lifted?
I guess. I don't know. Wait, wasn't it 12 systems
in the movie?
Yeah, it was 12.
So I think it's 13
one
now.
Extra.
Mm-hmm. So he's described as a self-declared tech flesh artist, peddler of kidnap and experimentation. They say he never stops until victims are begging for death just so he can say no. One of the mercenaries says, I tracked him to Jeddah. Evazan had built a host of mutilated cyber slaves, the first of the decraniated, which is something that we brought up ages ago from the Rogue One art book of these things in the background of the Jeddah sets of people whose faces were kind of sliced off at the nose and above.
Yeah.
And they're just like Lobot to the nth degree.
Yeah.
So this guy, this cybernetic dude missing his head entirely, but it's still being 100% functional, is a prototype for the decraniated. He was an early experiment. And he and his partner were trying to hunt down Evazan. They said they were on Jeddah. They missed him by seconds. We had to evac when the Imperials used some hellish new device to destroy the city. So it's still like, it's a tight fit, but apparently, you know.
Oh, that explains everything.
It doesn't, yeah.
That fixes my problem with Rogue One.
But it's also weird because we get, you know, on the one hand, Evazan comes off as just like a drunk with an ego.
Yeah, my problem with it isn't, wait a minute, Dr. Evazan and Pon de Baba are there and no one's there to catch them? That wasn't my problem. My problem was that they were there to begin with. The fact that it's just like, you bump into them and it's the exact same scene. But whatever, it is what it is.
At the very least, there's the explanation of like, there were evacs happening for some reason,
sure,
somehow.
You know,
like,
yeah.
at the very least.
We assumed that anyway because they're alive in that movie. And 2 hours later, the planet blows up.
And the decraniated have some kind of a presence in the mythos now that isn't like totally amorphous, like a background feature that was underused.
Sure.
So then things, just as a fun aside to how crazy Aphra gets also, once they get to Hive Base 1, it's full of biological and cybernetic weapons in cold storage, rejects that they describe as too expensive to mass produce and too successful to purge, such as Hutt clone troopers and a Rathtar melded with an interrogation droid.
What? So that's a beholder.
Yes, it is. It's this, and you just see this room full of crazy shit that doesn't make sense.
Hive Base didn't feature in the Vader comic run, the kind of experimentation guy that had the Jedi that I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I don't think so, but
it's different kind of Imperial research base.
I mean, that was that one guy's work. That was his like private work that he did for the Imperials to some degree. I'm sure his work is, you know, was commissioned and stored in Hive Base 1 from time to time, but that guy was operating in like a space whale that he'd enslaved and other kinds of crazy stuff. Like, he had his own thing going on.
We got to play Age of the Empire sometime.
Space whale.
Why is that?
Just, I want the three of us just to be able to play in this world and see the weird shit and have it make sense in some crazy way. I want it, just, you turn the corner and there is a Rathtar interrogator droid combo. It's a beholder. Behold it.
Actually, that's what I would like my player character to be, is a Rathtar melded with an interrogation droid.
Cap will play the decraniated, and
oh, that sounds entertaining. All right, so so the game master just sort of tells me what to do, and I do it.
Yeah. You get to roll the dice to see if what I say happens, you know, like
cool.
Have you speak through a voice modulator because it's, you know,
sure. No, that was not great.
Well, you didn't have a voice modulator.
Well, yeah, yeah. Anyhow, let's talk about Solo. So we're gonna link to a bunch of shit. We've got some images to share. First of all, this is a pretty recent thing. There was a tweet with an image of like Han and Chewie in chains a la those action figures we'd seen going back a ways.
Also in the same setup that they had in Rogue One where they were taking those rebel pilots away. It was the same thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Similar.
Nothing like goes wasted.
Yep, yep. the handcuffs that go up to the neck.
But behind them in the shadows, crouching about to like, I don't know, move through a narrow passage or I don't know, or maybe it's not even a person, but there is... You can clearly see the armor that Lando wears in Jabba's palace. Mm-hmm. We don't know if someone's wearing this armor or...
It looks like Donald Glover.
It couldn't it just be armor that's been on the Falcon for just such a disguise, you know?
Sure. But I think it's like it's kind of a...
If you're a smuggler and you're doing like weird things and having to have... You have to go incognito into some weird scum and villainy places, it would help to have... A weird set of freaky thrown together junk that you can blend in with the crowd, you know, because you can't.
I'm sure. I just, but once again, do we have to see it in this movie? I guess that's the more important.
No, obviously, but you know, Lando easily stands out in most crowds. like he's fly. Like he everything about him is just like his outfits are. Too cool. Like all eyes are on him all the time. So he needs to have something.
You should see the description and last shot of him picking out his outfit for like a fancy banquet. Like he's actually like looking at the pants like, this'll give me like slight bulge and like a hint of an ass. Like he's actually like, that's a thought process going into Lando's head.
Sure.
And what's crazy is I'm like, whoa, Star Wars like novel writing has changed over the years. Cause like, like Del Rey, pre-Disney would never have considered such a passage, but like
no,
this
they'd
just
only they'd allow,
up.
But they'd gladly allow it to happen with Princess Leia in Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That was a strange one because that really was like the only time. I mean, this like, I mean, you know, in Lando's thought process is like as he's like talking to an Imperial like vice governor, it's just like, oh yeah, we're gonna be like naked embracing in the Falcon's cabin later. You know, like whoa, this is great. Like, Well, yeah, I don't know. The Jabba's Palace disguise thing is just...
It's weird. It's super weird. It's one of the, like, I don't... It's one of the biggest I don't know how to feel about this thing so
it's
far.
Only, if it is in there for that reason, it's just gonna... It's only there because I clapped. I clapped when I recognized what it's from.
And that's what I'm, like, the greatest hits movie as we're, you know, always worried about, even though I tend to think this movie is going to be freaking awesome. Like... Doug, what is the greatest hits moment that would make you walk out of this movie?
Huh.
Like, there's got to be one.
I've been avoiding thinking about stuff like that because I want the fresh stuff.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I have to think. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one because I really
okay.
There's so many things I don't want to see happen to pick one that's like I would walk out. I don't know. I honestly don't think there's any one thing that there's no one thing that could get me to walk out of the theater.
I'll think of one.
If you name one that you think, Doug, how about this? Feel free to throw it at me, pitch me, and I'll let you know if I walk out or not.
Okay. So it is an odd thing. We have seen Ron Howard sent a photo of Lando's closet, and we didn't know what to make of it. Like. But turns out that's actually a thing in the set. Donald Glover, when he does the Falcon tour, he shows Lando's closet. It's there. It's a thing. It's full of outfits.
That's awesome.
That's the real deal. And then also, there's a recent Forces of Destiny episode where Leia acquires her Boosh outfit between Empire and Jedi.
Yeah.
And so now, inexplicably, though it didn't really need to happen, we have both outfits explained in theory.
Yeah.
How odd. Next up, Clint Howard will obligatory be in his brother's films. And so he is. In this case, Ron says if this was Rocky, he'd be the Burgess Meredith of the underground droid battle world.
Yeah.
You
gotta hit him.
He rubs L3 the wrong way and is part of her introduction in the film. We have, since the last episode, seen a Funko Pop 2-pack featuring a couple of quote-unquote fighting droids who look dope as fuck, and we really have zero details on this, but there's some battle droid component of the place where they meet Lando in the film.
Yeah, in Last Shot, L337's introduction, when she shows up on screen to talk to Lando, makes some joke about droids' rights, and L3 gets offended, and Lando's like, no, look, I know that's like very important to you. And she's like, it is very important to me. So I imagine that might be what rubs L3 the wrong way, is these droids being used as, you know, fighting droids. So I think that's where that's going to fit in.
I think it's interesting now, Clint Howard being in good company with Simon Pegg as being one of the few people on the planet who are both in Star Wars and Star Trek.
True. In the solo featurette, there's one scene that sticks out like crazy from the rest of everything else. It's blue-hued, and it's Han and Moloch and maybe Quay Tulsight, who's one of the Pike Syndicate, which is confirmed by his Lego minifig bio. That's a Clone Wars era thing that's never been represented in live action media before. So it's basically Han and some aliens with geometric headdresses in this subterranean sewer space. Like, there's a gang with them, and Han's being forced to confront a caterpillar person who comes out of the water.
Yeah, that was a weird thing.
It's really brief, and it's super cool looking, and it is exactly the kind of shit that has thus so far not appeared in any of the other Star Wars movies from this era. So
I mean, the Bogullet kind of, you know.
Well, kind of, except this is a person.
Yeah.
This is an alien person, it seems like. This thing's wearing clothes.
And the Bomar monks kind of through, you know, legacy stuff, I guess, but
yeah,
not really, you know.
But it's exciting to see. I mean, this movie's going to be a lot of things, but it's also just going to have a lot of weird space stuff, which is one of my favorite things about any Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially different space stuff, not obligatory cantina sequences.
Right. Oh, God, I don't want another cantina. That's another thing. It wouldn't make me walk out, but I'm tired of the cantina. I'm tired of enter a place, look at all the weirdos, and the it's like, that's just the cantina theme. Like, you're not fooling anybody. It's the same thing.
Well, I mean, it is going to happen in some regards in the weird pub in the Alps.
And in every obligatory cantina scene, there's never an alien that you see from another film. It's always all new aliens, all here, not in other cantinas. We don't see anyone reprise anything. We need more Twi'leks.
I think the importance is why are you doing it? Are you doing it because you're just trying to, you know, strike the usual chord, or are you trying to give us an idea of what it's like actually to live in this universe?
Yeah, that is important. But it does seem like a cool scene so far, though similarities it may have to prior scenes, because it is a very different kind of cantina environment and is very much on the fringes, like well beyond the scope of what is going on in the other films. One of the biggest things we've seen the most of recently are war scenes on Mimban. We speculated in the past about, like, what are these war sequences? What's going to, like, did Han go to battle? Is that what's going on? And actually, the plot has thickened. Because, yes, these are taking place on Mimban. And, yes, Han is a mud trooper deployed as, like, seemingly Imperial infantry or something. You know, like a meat puppet out mm-hmm. there in the trenches. But he bumps into, and we didn't see this coming a mile away, Beckett and Val in disguise. Because, like, we knew in the Lego minifigures, like, Beckett was labeled as being in disguise. But turns out Han wasn't.
Yeah.
It was just Beckett. And we have these trading cards now, a whole bunch of trading card images, which we'll link to on this episode's page, many of which feature, like, and you can see some of this in the trailer, or various trailers that have come out now. Beckett and Val there on the ground, Val being a mud trooper. But yeah, they're there for some nefarious means, and somehow they get looped in with Han, and then somehow Han, I guess, gets pegged as a deserter or gets in trouble somehow and then goes to prison with Chewbacca.
Yeah. It's like, it seems that he's going to try out to be a pilot, but he gets kicked out for having a mind of his own, as he says. From there, they're like, all right, to punish you, you're going to be a mud trooper now, you know, because you can't be a pilot because you're too much of a smart ass. So now you're a mud trooper. And then when you fuck up as a mud trooper, you go to jail. You know?
Right.
And you have to share a cell with a big hairy Wookiee.
And there's a scene on Mimban where he says, I'm a driver. I'm a great pilot. And this is this is presumably him talking to Beckett while on Mimban. So I'm curious to see how this all pans out.
I was like, take me with you, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. There's also one other thing that I want to bring up before we get into the actual timeline with Monopoly. This is not a new observation, but it's one we haven't discussed on the show. In the first trailer for Solo, like the teaser, we see two shots that have been repeated often. There's a shot looking from low, looking up at Han, looking up at the Falcon, and there's the wide aerial shot of Han and Kira schlepping across the desert to go to presumably the coastline where they're having that conversation with Beckett. Chewbacca was not originally in those shots,
yeah,
but has since been added into those shots seamlessly, I might add. You'd never know he wasn't there, but now he's schlepping behind Han and Kira holding some suitcases,
yeah,
and is there alongside Han looking up at the Falcon. I don't know what to make of this.
Yeah.
Like, no one really does. Like, everyone assumes that it's attributed to the differences between, like, the Lord Miller version and the Ron Howard version, but if it's putting Chewbacca into sequences where he wasn't formerly a part of them.
How does that work?
Right, because the script did not change.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and I'm wondering if maybe Chewbacca was in those shots or was in versions of those shots, but they chose to not use those shots because that was like they wanted to spotlight Han Solo. I'm not sure. I really don't know what to make of it.
I mean, we'll have to have. I'm sure this is something that's not going to be answered just by watching the movie.
No.
So once the movie comes out, we're going to have to figure out, like, okay, did they add Chewie in or was Chewie removed from the trailers?
Right. And then where do those shots take place in the sequence of the film? Right. Were they always at those places in the sequence of the film? Is there a way to do those sequences without Chewbacca? And how would that have been put?
I got to feel that it's easier to remove Chewbacca than it is to add him in. You know?
I don't know.
I don't. Because it's pretty good. I mean, the trailer looks like he belongs.
Yeah.
You know? And unless they want to add him, unless they like bump that up to the beginning of the movie for some crazy reason, and then suddenly Chewie's just in the background all the time and not being acknowledged, where it's just like, I don't know, like just Photoshop in a big furry chest, you know, where the head's out of frame, where every time you're looking at Han, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But let's talk about Monopoly, huh?
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, the game of Monopoly. Everyone loves Monopoly. Everyone loves playing Monopoly and has a great time.
Always.
Always playing Monopoly. and boy, nothing says I have fun playing Monopoly like buying yet another version of Monopoly.
Another Star Wars version of
Monopoly. Yeah. But this does appear, you know, not all Monopoly boards that are licensed pertaining to something always have the continuity of the film laid out in the structure of the Monopoly board. That's not a given and should not be taken as a given in this case. However, in this case, maybe it's because the film doesn't backtrack. It only goes straight forward. From planet to planet to planet to planet, this does appear to be in sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So in the light blue section, we have the recruitment center, the Imperial Academy, and the training facility. It notably omits a lot of the like early Corellia street rat stuff that we know is in the film.
No one wants to buy that anyway.
But interesting, because like, I mean, I wonder.
I want to build a hotel in the Imperial Recruitment Center. That's like, what? How is this? This doesn't make sense, Monopoly.
For mom and dad, they say goodbye to their babies.
Stay the night. This way, they don't have to make a hyperspace jump that early, so soon saying goodbye. You have a continental breakfast, and you're on your way. In fact, you can for the continental breakfast, we got coaxial crystal pancakes. We got
you mean co-reactor pancakes?
Co-reactor pancakes. We got your Two Moon.
Skillet?
Skillet. You want them crystals in your milkshake? We got that too. Your blue milkshake.
So it's, I don't know. I'm curious if we'll see those, like, we see the recruitment center in the trailer. I don't know how much they're going to linger, or is it going to be montage, this, you know, academy training facility. This is this key art that's just getting, you know, popped in there that we don't spend any time on, or are we like seeing Han in school for a while? I don't know.
It'd be cool to get a little background on what it's like to, you know, train to be a stormtrooper or a pilot.
Yeah, if they're ever going to do it, now's the time. It's not when I would have suspected, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, they did a little bit of the pilot stuff in Lost Stars, but, you know, obviously a movie version's a lot more visceral. It would be kind
of
cool. Mm-hmm.
The training of stormtroopers is like, we can't afford to give you all blasters now. The only time you're ever going to fire your blaster is if you're in combat for the first time. So here, just hold this stick and go pew-pew, and move on to the next part of your training.
The brown section is Battlefield, which has mud troopers in the graphics, so presumably this all represents Mimban. Mm-hmm. And the pen, which Star Wars News Net suspects is where Han and Chewie are held captive.
Is that the go to jail card as well, or whatever? The like the go to jail section?
Well, it would be next to the go to jail.
So you think like maybe escaping Kessel with Chewbacca is like, oh, I can do the Kessel run because I had to fucking escape that shit, like escape Alcatraz?
I don't think it's Kessel. I initially thought it was.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of temporary prison barracks on Mimban.
Hmm. But then why would Chewie be there?
We don't know.
It could be just Wookiee slave labor. I'm actually curious, something we haven't really discussed is what is the Empire doing on Mimban that, A, they're in active battle. So who are they fighting? Because the rebellion isn't really like a formalized thing at this point.
That's a very good question.
Could be any citizens. I mean, like if Mimban, if Mimban has a, you know, its own army or whatever, who knows?
Well, it's interesting because Mimban's never been, it was kind of a backwater world before, and it still very well could be. And also, you know, and maybe it's just like, you know, guerrilla style locals.
Yeah.
But also, if they need Wookiee slave labor, what are they building there?
Right, and if they're harvesting, is this another ground for harvesting Kyber, perhaps? Because
that's a good point too. Because that is what Mimban is famously known for. Was
maybe Chewie's building the co-reactor? Chewie's building the co-reactor. He knows engines.
And also, Beckett and Val are there undercover, which is presumably
they want something.
A very fucking dangerous mission. So whatever's going on there has to be hella important.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're stealing Kyber crystals for Dryden Vos. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's gosh. I mean, this is one of the biggest question marks of the film is like, is these key plot elements. We now know where people are, how they're moving around. We don't really know the motivating factors. We don't know the MacGuffins at play. But we're starting to have more of a clue. The pink section is the den, which is speculated to be Dryden Vos's hangout that we've seen in many of the trailers. Seems legit. A spaceport, and then, much to everyone's surprise, a TIE fighter factory.
Hmm.
The Star Wars News Net speculates that they need to steal a cargo hauler from the TIE fighter factory, and that's the cargo hauler is the thing piloted by Rio Durant, Jon Favreau's character.
Oh, is that the thing that we see kind of like on Vandor possibly heading to or from the Convey-X train?
Yeah, exactly that.
Okay, got it.
So that would be a heavy load industrial Imperial fighter that has good, or not fighter, but like freighter that has good speed, that can do atmospheric stuff that they would need for the heist. So they have to steal it from the, I mean, that's another whole another facet. Okay. So jack
the heist for the heist.
Yeah. Jack a car from the Imperials, from their fucking TIE fighter factory, mm-hmm. to go then steal from the Convey-X. And who knows who that belongs to?
Mm. Oh, if it belongs to Jabba. Oi.
Well, those are stormtroopers firing at them on the Convey-X, right?
Yeah. The range troopers. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's Imperial.
So why don't they just fly it over? Why they got to use the train?
I don't know. When does Beckett really tell Han about the mission? There's been some speculation of like how the trailers are edited, because like there's a scene where they're kind of getting their mission briefing on the planet with the beach that is also the planet with the Alps, as far as we know. And that's where it appears he's giving the mission briefing, but in theory, they're also getting the mission from Dryden Voss. That's a bit mushy, because then we go to Orange, the Orange section, where we have campsite, where Han gets his blaster, bridge, which we don't know about, but must have something to do with the Convex, and then the impound. So that's the who knows. I don't know what to make of that. But what it does suggest is that the heist is first, then there's the confrontation with Infis, because they were both targeting the same hall. So then the rivalry between the nemesis relationship happens because the Skyriders are trying to get the same thing that Beckett's team is trying to get. Beckett's team gets it, or maybe the Cloud Riders get it. Either way, there's an inevitable confrontation with the Cloud Riders after the Convex thing, because the red section is Chase, followed by Refinery Canteen, followed by the Coast. The Coast is where the showdown with Infis happens.
I found out what it was that it would make me walk out of the theater. If what they're trying to steal from the Convex is the Lost Ark.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, that's not a legit greatest hit. I think the best I'm going to be able to do, Doug, and I'm sure there is something, but the best I'll be able to do while we're recording is if Han has a moment in the cantina where he gets in trouble and Beckett's got to bail him out, and then Beckett's like, here's a tip for you, kid. Always shoot first.
Yeah, I mean, I would groan. I would groan out loud. And really,
yeah, you wouldn't walk out.
Yeah, I wouldn't walk out. But like everyone in my vicinity would be like, "Who shut that guy up?" Because I would go, "Ugh," and I would like. Meanwhile,
Doug,
be like,
Doug, here's the thing. Yeah. No one would hear you groan because everyone would be cheering and clapping and hooting because they made a reference.
I would feel really, if in that scene where he gets like held up and Beckett has to come in and help. If it is just Greedo, like if Greedo's like, ah, oh,
even
solo,
better,
blah, 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 solo, and Beckett's like, Greedo, I think someone on the holophone needs you. Oh, I better go. It's Jabba. Oh, it's Jabba. And he leaves. And he's like, all right, kid, let's get out of here. Take it from me. Next time, just shoot him. You know, then I'd be like, oh my God, that in combination, I'd be tempted.
Yeah.
Someday, Greedo.
Yeah.
You're going to get yours someday, Greedo.
There's a possibility that the thing in the Convex is something called Coaxium. That was something that appeared on some sort of a card game that featured equipment that's either coming out or has come out pertaining to Solo. If it's Coaxium, then, my friends, maybe we start to have the answer about where the hell the co-reactor pancakes come from.
Yeah, Coaxium.
Yep.
Now that's where we're going to cheer and everyone's going to be like, what the fuck?
But that's the same thing as Take This Fight to the Skies. I was pumped for Take This Fight to the Skies. I was ready to cheer and have no one else understand why, but didn't happen. So.
Well, okay, hold on. If a stormtrooper says, let's take this fight to the skies, and then activates a jetpack, everyone's cheering. They don't have to have a point of reference.
It's like traitor. Yeah, it's true. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't even know what the traitor thing was going to happen, and we were like, oh, shit! Like, this is great! It's great when an anonymous trooper behind a mask just says, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to stand out.
I'm a tough guy.
Yeah.
The yellow section is the tavern, the droid arena, and the back room, which is presumably where the Sabacc game happens.
Which scares me to think that Lando doesn't appear until like the last third of this film.
But that does appear to be the case.
The timing could be very different depending on all this, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, proportionately in terms of planets visited, but if they spend more time on this. But it's crazy that, yeah, the Convex chase and all that, and the Cloud Riders and all that business doesn't happen until something goes wrong.
But you see,
presumably they either lose something or need to get something back, or the deal changes.
Right.
And that's when they need Lando and they need a fast ship.
Yeah.
And the full Sabacc scene that was screened at CinemaCon, you can watch the end of that scene in the 360 presentation, but the important parts is that Kira explains that the smuggler they're going to see, he's retired, he's a sportsman, and he really loves his ship, which he himself won in a game of Sabacc. So when the scene opens to Lando, he's telling a story about sleeping with an Imperial spy, but not knowing that she's an Imperial spy, which is fun. And Han gets in the game. So then there's the Han name mispronunciation thing, which I'm not really sure about. Because Lando says, like, I'm a lucky guy, Han. But he pronounces it Han like hand.
Yeah, like hand. I'm a lucky guy, Han.
Which is how Billy Dee says it in
yeah
the original trilogy.
And then Han says, it's Han, like Dawn.
Let's do the chance to save Han.
That's where it's from, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an odd moment. Then there's a montage where they're like, you know, gambling and things are getting crazy. There's one thing that sounds super cartoony the way it's described. They described a shot where an alien chomps his nails like a buzzsaw,
yeah.
Which is like total Looney Tunes. Yeah. Is it going to play out like fun? I mean, hey, slapstick comedy is okay, but how goofy is it really? And then the 360 scene starts. So that's the gist of it.
Yeah, holding out hope for all of it being cool. But if Greedo is in it and there's a reference to shooting first, that's grounds for walking out. I don't know if I would, but it'd be tough. It'd be tough to sit through.
So this puts us in the home stretch because there's only two colors left, and one of them doesn't really matter for shit. And that is, we got the green, which is Operation Center Landing Platform Spice Mines.
Hmm.
So, okay, the final deal, whatever it is, involves the Spice Mines of Kessel, hence the Kessel Run. Because then the blue section, which would be Park Place and Boardwalk, is the Kessel Run and Millennium Falcon.
Put a hotel in the Millennium Falcon. Disney is going to try and do it somehow.
So that sort of stages for me that there's going to be a lack of locations at the very least in this final section of the film. Once they get Lando, they're spending the bulk of their time on the ship or doing the stuff in Kessel where there's some kind of big uprising, because we've seen this like weird kind of riot sequence with L337 saying, "I'm so glad we took this job," and so on. So yes, he is a third act element for the most part, but depending, it might just be that the film stops traveling so much or is in a perpetual state of traveling. Therefore, most of it takes place on the ship at that point.
It would make sense, especially if they, you know, if the train heist doesn't go their way and, oh no, Enfys Nest got the thing that we're after. Oh, now we're stuck. We're abandoned because our thing was, you know, destroyed. And it's that typical end of act two before act three darkest moment, you know, where they're usually, you're not traveling somewhere, you know, it's like we have to sort of work something out first and then you spring back into act three with something. So that makes sense, but it would suck if we didn't get to see Lando until like late act two.
Also, I mean, there's a possibility that the movie is not told linearly.
True.
Yeah, that's true. And we don't know what the operations center or the landing platform are. That could both be anything. You know, Kessel things. But to what end? I don't know. There could be places where we spend a lot of time, boring though they sound. Hard to say. So that's all we know so far. We only have one more official episode of State of the Empire on the books before Solo happens. That's going to be coming out May 21st, and then the film comes out May 25th. We'll be seeing it the night of May 24th, and you can expect us to be releasing an episode promptly. In fact, the entire State of the Empire gang will, for the first time ever, be seeing a Star Wars film together in the same place.
Woo!
Yeah, so not only are we going to have a good time, but we're going to be able to promptly record this instead of doing it in the middle of the night.
After some pancakes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're gonna get some co-reactor pancakes, and then we're going to do the review.
Do it live from Denny's.
Denny's, if you want to sponsor. But in the past, our final episode before the movie comes out, we get all the pieces. We have all the information. We might actually have that this time, but we'll see. At the very least, it's also pretty near to the official 30th anniversary day of Willow. So our Willow watch content is going to resume shortly. Brace yourselves for that, and may the Force be with you.
State of the Empire is a production of the Consequence Podcast Network. Check out our expanding roster of music, film, and television podcast programming at consequenceofsound.net. This show is recorded and produced in Orlando, Florida at Nerdy Show Studios, home of the Nerdy Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. Discover more at nerdyshow.com. Our theme song, Maximum Rebo, was written and performed by Zantilla. Find more awesome tracks at zantilla.bandcamp.com. Special thanks to our Bothan pals in the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group, the Nerdy Show Network Patreon backers, and G29T, Fifth Degree Labor Droid. From scanning your luggage to repairing the pilots to your star speeder, there's nothing G2 won't do to make sure that you have a safe and pleasant flight. Next time you catch a Star Tour, be sure to tell him Doug says hi.
Yabba.
I've always wanted to touch him. I like the texture of Yaba is something I need to discover.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.